Blog Talk Radio.
Hello out there. I am trying to get to my page. I am so sorry, you guys. I'm having some real difficulties here. So please bear with me, Ms. Coleman. I hope you're waiting patiently for me to get to you. I am so sorry. I can't even get into my page itself. I am so sorry, you guys. Give me one second here. I might have to go back and come in another way. I cannot believe this. I can't even get to my show. Oh, man. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm trying to get into my studio. And I'm not having any luck. Give me a second here. It's not showing any of my stuff. There we go. Let's see. I am so sorry, you guys. Oh, I see why. I'm on the wrong end, and it's not going to let me in here. I'm going to have to go back out, you guys, and come back in. I am so sorry. Let's see. Please bear with me, you guys. Ms. Coleman, are you there?
I am here. Yes, ma'am.
I am so sorry, sweetie. My computer started acting crazy on me. I was lost. I was trying to find every way I could to get on. I want to say good afternoon and thank you very much. Good evening, that is. I want to welcome you to Through the Eyes of the Black Woman. My name is Felita, and this is on the Say Your Peace Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for waiting patiently for me. I am so sorry. Wow. I have to give you some extra time for that. I was like panicking, like, what the going on? Anyway, well, I was reading your book, and it was like, pow. Okay, Miss Lady, first of all, I want to welcome everyone out there. Sorry, you guys, I took so long getting on. I had some technical difficulties, but we're here. I want to welcome you. I hope you're going to enjoy the show tonight with me and Miss Valerie Coleman. And she is the author of The Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box, in reference to where we're celebrating Black Love or Valentine's Day. So I thought I would try to grab me some authors that write about love, or so-called supposed to be love, huh? So first of all, we want to say welcome you to the show, and I want you to tell us first a little bit about yourself.
Well, let's see. I've been writing for quite some time now. My passion or my interest in writing is more so to empower people to have better lives, make better life decisions, better life choices. So everything I do is really to share my personal experience so that in the future people can just live better. I made a lot of mistakes in life, and so to avoid people from making some of the same mistakes, I've become very transparent, put my business out there to really help people, just do better. And that was really the formation of The Forbidden Secrets of the goodie box. It has to do with a lot of personal experience. Of course, any writer is going to infuse some personal experience. But in addition to that, I surveyed hundreds of men to get their feedback on why they do the things they do when they date, what they think about women when they are dating. You know, when a woman does these things, you know, what does a man think about that? You know, what type of things really turn a man on and off in a relationship? So I took that information and I wrapped it around these fictional characters to really help women make better relationship decisions so that they can have better, make better choices when it comes to men and just feel more fulfilled when it comes to dating.
Okay. Now, let's talk about this book. Since I've read it and some people haven't, I want you to basically tell us about the characters in the book, the background of why you wrote the book, and where, how do you feel about it now that it's out there?
The characters, the book is based around three girlfriends who are midlife-ish, we'll say 35, 40-ish, and two of them are single, one of them is married. Rachel is married, a business owner. Deborah is single, and she is an attorney, and Sherry is also single. She was an engineer, but she just recently, throughout the book, she gets laid off. And so these girls, you know, they met in college, so, you know, they're educated, they're attractive, they're, you know, they're powerful, independent black women, and they're not understanding why I've got all this together, why can't I find a good man? So they go through this whole journey of trying to find a quality man. They talk about some of the issues that they dealt with and some of the type of men that they dated, and then I actually take you on a journey of seeing some of the men that they date and, you know, some of the things that they go through. So you get to meet some of the crazy men, some of the no good men, but then you get to meet quality men as well, because not all men are bad. You know, as quiet as it's kept, not all men are dogs. So the book is not about male bashing. I want to make that very clear. I'm not out to bash men, because I love men, and I want to portray them, you know, in a realistic light. Some are good and some are bad, just like women. Some are good and some are bad.
Exactly.
Then there's the other character, the relationship expert, Doc Reed, R-E-E-D, who I created, again, off of communicating with men, conversations I've had with men, and then out of personal experience. And he is the relationship guru who guides Deborah and had already guided Sherry through the process of making better choices. So the men that come in and out of these women's lives, who, of course, bring the chaos, bring the confusion, and then some bring the comfort and the peace into the relationship. As far as why I wrote the book, I've been married now for 18 years, and I found that I have girlfriends who are married and single. Those who are single, you know, who are around my age, you know, some have never been married. Some are trying to be married, you know, for the second time, and they're like, you know, the dating game is awful. You know, I don't understand men. What's going on with this? What's going on with that? You know, so I really wanted to help them make better choices and better decisions. And in so doing, I wrote the book to really empower them. What I found was in writing the book for women, I'm finding that the audience is primarily women, but I'm finding that a lot of men are buying the book. For one of three reasons. They're telling me they're buying the book to see if I know what I'm talking about. Two, they're buying the book so they can learn about women, for either to use the information against the women or to learn about women out of sincerity. Or three, they are fathers of daughters and they want to share the information with their daughters.
Oh.
And then I also have parents and grandparents who are buying the book for their younger daughters. So the request has been made of me now to write I'm calling it a prequel, but a book for younger girls, like a preteens, although I have girls as young as 12 years old who have read the book, because it's a clean book. It's not erotica in any sense, although the characters do have sex. It's nothing, you know, vivid and erotic or in nature. It's nothing like that. But I have had a request to write something for younger girls, you know, 12 to 16, 17, you know, in that age range. So that may be next. I don't know.
Okay. Now, so let me ask you this. So what did you find out when you had the opportunity to survey these guys? What did you find out? What is the ultimate problem, or is there an ultimate answer to why? Because, you know, you said something that was very key, and your characters really... Women complain that there's no good man out there. I have friends that are single. I'm married. Mm-hmm. I have friends that are single, and they, I mean, it's like they are just so, like, frustrated with the idea that they can't find anybody. So what are the guys saying about this?
Well, you know, some of the things that when I surveyed men, and I found, like, some of the top things that men complain about with women, one of the one things they complain about is drama. They don't like the drama that oftentimes come with women. And that part of that drama comes with us being emotional creatures. You know,
yes,
but we consider
exactly.
emotion, men consider drama, all the crying, all the complaining, and you know, so, but also the drama in the gooseneck and the head rocking and the, you know, the teeth sucking, you know, men don't like that kind of stuff. They also said one of the other things they didn't like in women was the needy, clingy woman. Most of the men whom I surveyed didn't like that type of woman. They liked the independent woman, but they didn't want the woman who was so independent that she thought she didn't need a man. You know, she was what a hermaphrodite, where she was both male and female. They didn't want that woman, but they did want right. But they did want the woman who was was independent. You know, who went out and made her own money, was self sufficient, but still was able to balance the fact that she needed a man. Wanted a man and was, you know, was desirous of a man.
Go ahead.
And I was going to say the other thing that men said that they really liked and was interested in a woman was someone who they could have fun with, someone who was funny, who they could enjoy being around. But what I found, which was the most interesting to me, when I talked to a lot of the men, they wanted that spiritual quality in the woman, but a lot of the men honestly said men love sex, but they would prefer for the woman whom they want to be their wife, they would rather that she make him wait. And the reason being is because if he has to work and wait, it says several things to him. For one, it says, if I have to work and wait, that means she's not going to be readily available and easily snatched up by any and everybody.
That's so, a good concept.
Right, because, you know, so they think about things like that. But the most important thing from her perspective is not only from her perspective have I saved myself in the event that it doesn't work out, have I reserved my the best of who I have from him, but also I've not connected my soul ties with him. So that I'm not all cloudy and misjudging in my head. But what happens is when we put a man into chase mode and we make him wait for the goodie, but we still have a great time together, you know, we can laugh, we can giggle, we can enjoy each other's company, but still delay the intimacy, his heart becomes engaged.
Exactly.
And once his heart becomes engaged, it's difficult for him to just turn his back and walk away. So oftentimes what we do as women, you know, because the odds, we actually, quiet as it's kept, we help to make men the dogs that we claim that they are.
Yes, you are so right, 100% right.
Now,
explain that, elaborate on that.
Well, the thing is, we've created the monsters, and now we're complaining that we can't tame them. And I say that because if we were to raise our expectations, women as a whole collectively, and say, you know, I'm not just going to give myself to a man, and when I say give myself, I'm talking about the goodie box. And let me say this real quick before I forget. For your first three listeners who go to my website, thegoodyboxbook.com, that's the goody, G-O-O-D-Y, boxbook.com, and send me a message through the contact us page, I will send them a free copy of the book. That's the first three. They got to do it at thegoodyboxbook.com. They can hear the theme song.
Thegoodyboxbook.com?
The goodyboxbook.com. They can hear the theme song there. They can hear the first chapter of the book, of the audio book. What we do is, if all the women as a collective would decide that, you know, I'm just not going to arbitrarily give myself to a man, if we as a collective stood and did that, then all men would have to put in effort. I have to put in work. I have to, you know, be committed and obligated. I can't just, you know, call this one and call that one 3 o'clock in the morning to go get me some, because if it's that easy for him to get it from this woman, he doesn't have to put in the work for this woman. You know, so why do I have to wine and dine this one? Or why do I have to spend time with her? Or why do I have to, you know, take her out? Or why do I have to be affectionate? Or, you know, give her quality time or words of affirmation or, you know, whatever it is that makes her happy. Why do I have to invest in her when I have this lady over here who will freely give me what I want?
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm not really interested in her emotionally, but she will satisfy my physical desires, I'll just go to her who doesn't require anything of me but to skeet and screech.
Yeah. So, that's a clear conception of, or perception that is, of what a man actually thinks. And you know, I'm glad you said that because I've heard that before from guys. Now,
mm-hmm.
why is it that, and this is one thing you said earlier, when you made the statement that men don't want a strong woman, they want a woman that's independent and strong. Let me say this, from my experience, that is a bunch of crock when a man tells you that. And I'm going from my experience. That is a bunch of crock. Because when a man gets a woman who has it all, she has her own house, own job, own everything, and she wants to meet this guy and want to be with this guy, and all of a sudden he gets intimidated by her, the way she carries herself, then all of a sudden there's problems. So men, when he told you that, not all of them, just some of them, they're not prepared for, when we say a strong black woman, a black man hollers, that's what he wants 24/7. But believe me, sweetie, from my experience, that's not necessarily true.
And I think a lot of it depends, I agree with you, but I think a lot of it depends on, it depends on both of them. It depends on the quality of both him and her, because she can have all of that and have the attitude that is not commensurate or complimentary to a quality woman. So she can have the fine car, the fine house, you know, and look the part and everything, but have this awful, nasty attitude that makes him, you know, she could speak condescendingly to him or, you know, or make him feel less of a man because she is a breadwinner. But then you also have a woman who can have all of that and still know how to put her man on a pedestal, even though he's not bringing in all the money, even though he may not be running that Fortune 500 company. So it depends on, you know, it depends on the both of them together.
And you know what, too? Another thing, we also bring our own baggage from one relationship to another, and that goes with both. It's not just the women who do it. The men don't holler. It's always the woman who does it. Men bring in their baggage, too, from their other relationships, too.
Well, not just other relationships. We bring in baggage from our childhood.
Exactly.
You know, the way, was our father there or not there? The way our parents brought us up, you know, our thoughts on money, our thoughts on dating, our thoughts on rearing children, our expectations when it comes to, you know, all kind of things. All that comes from not just relationships, but our environment, our experiences, our role models. So,
exactly. And
how we're brought up. There are a lot of things, and even our genetic makeup, our birth order makes a difference, whether we're introverts or extroverts, you know, all that makes a difference. Left brain, right brain, you know, are you a filler or a thinker? All the personality types, all those things play into, and even the way you give and receive love, the five love languages, all those things play into the dynamics of a relationship. And more often than not, we don't fully understand ourselves. So here we are, not fully understanding who we are, what we want, what we need out of a relationship, and we're trying to get into a, not just a relationship, but a marriage, and then bringing in children with somebody, and we don't even fully understand ourselves.
Yeah. But, okay, so why do you think we do that? I find that we, you know, we're so desperate. Sometimes it just makes me want to take some women and just slap them. Oh, you got a husband. You got a husband. I ain't got no, I'm just looking for somebody. Why do we do that?
Well, I think there's probably multiple reasons. Sometimes we just want a man because everybody else around us has a man.
Okay.
Sometimes we want a man because mama says we should have a man. Sometimes we want a man because biologically our bodies tell us we should, you know, it's time to procreate. You know, sometimes we want a man because emotionally I don't want to be by myself. I want a man mm-hmm. because I need somebody to help me financially. You know, there's a lot of reasons why people want what they want. But I think at the end of the day, oftentimes we choose our mates, whether they are marriage, you know, marriage mates or just, you know, life partners. We choose them for the wrong reasons.
Uh-huh.
We don't commit to finding people. You know, we choose people because of maybe how they look or how they make us feel. We don't choose people, which is a very short-term type perspective. We don't look long term.
Mm-hmm.
We don't look at how they are going to. Will this person be willing to change my diapers when I'm old and gray and I can't wipe my tail? Is this a quality person who's going to do that for me? Is this the type of person who I'm willing to leave my children home alone with because I know they're not going to mess with them? They will care for them appropriately. Is this the type of, you know, we don't think on those. Is this the type of person, if I leave my purse and my checkbook laying out, do I have to worry about them stealing the check somewhere in the middle of the checking account when I come back? I'm wondering why checks are bouncing. You know, are they going to try to tap into my past? I'll tell you what, I've heard of all kind of crazy stuff. You know, so we don't think about that because he makes me feel a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm caught in the moment. You know,
mm-hmm.
especially if he has this sexual prowess and, oh, Lord, I'm singing and he's making me hit falsetto I ain't never knew I could do, then all logic goes, it's gone.
And you know what, too? I think about some people that I know that work in 2 and 3 jobs, and he's
mm-hmm.
sitting at the house. What do you say to women who do that?
Foolishness. Well, I mean, you know, it's one thing if they're married and till death do us part in sickness and in health, and he has gotten sick and he can't
mm-hmm.
work. And so she is, you know, obliging her marital vows, and she's doing what she needs to do to provide for her family because she's honoring the vows that she set before God and man. I honor that.
Mm-hmm.
I respect that to the utmost. If
mm-hmm.
he's sitting at home playing with Nintendo and Xbox because he doesn't want to work, he's able-bodied man.
Mm-hmm.
There ain't nothing wrong with him. He just want to suck up air and live up under her. He is what I have labeled as a parasite. And she need to put him out
mm-hmm.
just like that chick did on Baby Boy when she put out Jody. It's time to go. I'm not having it. Mm-mm. That's not going to happen.
But
no.
You know what? But, you know, it's sad, Valerie, to be honest with you, that it's so many of our women who are taking care of men. And the concept that, you know, we use that we don't want to put our black men, we don't want to neglect our black men. You know,
mm-hmm.
they have that concept of that excuse. But
mm-hmm.
my thing is, nothing from nothing leaves not an absolutely, I used to say, goddamn thing. So if you don't have nothing and I don't have nothing, we can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
You sitting across the table looking at me, I got a pile of bills in front of me. You ain't got nothing in front of you. And
mm-hmm.
we can't do this. But you have so many women who come from a standard of life that they live to be with this person where they're barely making it because she's trying to love him or she's trying to get him to take the place of somebody in her life that wasn't
mm-hmm.
there. So she suffers in the process.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to those women?
Well, I mean, there's a, like you said, there's a deficiency in her heart. Because for some reason, she is willing to really sacrifice her peace of mind,
mm-hmm.
even her financial stability, because if he's an extra mouth in the house, that's food,
mm-hmm.
that's utilities, that's clothing, and if he's, you know,
mm-hmm.
if he's absorbing, you know, internet time, porn, whatever else he might be doing, that's extra, you know, he's putting in extra hours to oblige his little vices. That's extra money coming out of her pocket that she wouldn't have to spend. There's something that she feels that she's missing, and it's either it's insecurity,
mm-hmm.
either it's a fear of being alone, but it's some type of emotion that she needs to work
mm-hmm.
through, and more than likely she's afraid of it's some type of fear of being
mm-hmm.
alone, or you know, fear of being the only one without a guy, fear of not having
mm-hmm.
somebody to spend time with on the holidays, fear of being considered this, fear of that, you know. But at the end of the day, if he's not adding any value, what's the purpose? You know, biblically speaking, the Bible even says the man who doesn't work doesn't eat.
That's right. That's right.
So,
lower than an infidel.
Right. That's in Thessalonians. So if you don't work, my boys were going to high school. Now, of course, as long as they're in school and doing their thing, I'm covering you. But I told my oldest son, because he wanted to play games in high school, tested as talented, as gifted in grade school, got in high school, and got something happened, invasion of the body snatcher. Somebody took my child, left the alien. I told him at 18, if you don't get it together and go to college, you're either getting out of my house or you're getting a job. But you don't get the milk off of me. I've never had a man milk it off of me, and we're not starting now. So figure out what you're going to do. Get to looking for something, because you're not mooching off of mama. Well, he sure figured it out real quick. Somebody's got to set the standards. And sometimes it's the mamas. You know, sometimes if we're raising black men, let's raise them with some standards. We can't coddle and baby them the whole way through, because they'll grow up and be these men who want to be coddled and babied by these women and useless, and all they want to do is no. Mm-mm.
But you know what? I raised a son by my not big. Well, he was 18 when I actually got married, so mm-hmm. I did basically raise my son by myself, and that was a fear of mine that I mm-hmm. was coddling him. And there was a period in his life that I think I did, but he finally, mm-hmm. like you say, got it together, graduated from high school, he went into the Navy, and he got mm-hmm. out, and he did his travels, and now he came back home. And mm-hmm. he's got a good job, he's happy. But my fear is, my whole thing is, I was like, God, please don't ever let him have to go to jail for something. Never.
Right.
You know, those are the things that go through my, because I know I try to instill in him all the positive things and the good things. But,
right.
you know, sometimes no matter what you put in them, sometimes it don't always reflect on what you put in them.
Right.
So
right.
you have to deal with that. So now I'm almost at a peace, because sometimes he's like, Mom, let me breathe. But it's
right,
like
right,
I don't
right.
want any, I just don't want nothing to happen to him, because, like I said, he is the only child I had, and,
right.
you know, he's like that other part of me. So, and then I also have to, I watch how he interacts with women. He's very
mm-hmm.
gentlemanly, like, I've never seen him mistreat anybody anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's more at certain times naive
mm-hmm.
to the women
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
let them walk over him from time to time. But that's me. That's me
right.
looking in from the outside.
Right.
It might not like
right.
it might not be like that, but that's what I'm interpreting as. But I think now I can almost kind of rest, because I did raise a son. You were probably more harder on your son than I probably was. I don't know why.
To hear my husband tell it, I'm an engineer by vocation, so I'm very logical and
uh-huh.
I'm very math based. So. When it comes to the emotional component of women, I'm not that I'm not emotional, but I'm not as emotional as most women. So I taught my boys like critical thinking skills and problem solving skills, and before you do something, stop and think about the consequences. So my whole thing is logic.
Uh-huh.
Now, what's going to happen
yeah.
if you do that? What's going to be the result? So I was able to teach them those type of skills. So like my oldest son now is an advocate and a counselor for young black men. And he's working on his master's. My baby boy is also an engineer, and he's working on his master's. So they're both using
mm-hmm.
this problem-solving skills to help other people.
Mm-hmm. That's
so,
awesome. That's
yeah,
awesome.
So I wasn't necessarily I think I was fairly strict on them, because now I was single until my oldest was 12. My baby boy was 10. And then I got married. And my husband felt that I had my apron strings around them, because I didn't let them, like, cut the grass. I thought that they were cheating to cut the grass at 12. So he's like, all right, you better let them cut that grass. So there were some things I started releasing, you know, around that time. But I think it's important, especially as mothers of young black men, to my objective in raising my boys, before my husband was there, was to put quality black men around them, which included
mm-hmm.
my father and other, you know, male role models, and then also to raise them to be the type of men that I would want to marry. So I
exactly.
taught them how to open and close the doors for me. So at 3 and 4 years old, or 3 and 5 years old, they're 2 years apart, when we would go somewhere, they would open the door for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're at the restaurant, and then they would know to hold it for other people. So you got this little 5-year-old standing there holding the door for people. They would just look like, what in the world? Who does that? You know. Or if a woman gets cold, they would take off their coat and put it on them. You know, they were very respectful. Yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. You know, I taught them that from an early age, and they still do that now. And they are absolutely
mm-hmm.
wonderful. I still want to call them kids, but they're young men, 28
yeah.
and 30. I'm blessed to have wonderful children, but it started early. And I think that's
you
important.
Have to start early.
Yeah, you can't take a grown man who's 30, 40 years old and we as women want to fix him. He's got 30, 40 years worth of mess built up. You're not equipped to do that. I don't care if you have a PhD in psychology. You're not equipped to fix him overnight. It's not going to happen. That's not your job.
You really need that. We do that. We want to fix. We want to make these, mold these men into what we want as men. I don't get that. If he was, and then you think of where we meet these people at. I don't know what the deal is. I can't say I can remember any successful marriage where you marry somebody that you met in the club. I can't see that. You go to the club, you go in there dressed half naked.
Right.
But you don't want the man touching you in that way, or you don't want him to label you in that way, but you go in there with your tight dress on, your badonkadonk, as they call it, all up in the air like a horse. You know, you go in there with tight clothes on, and, you know, you the stilettos, like you're getting ready to walk the streets, and then you expect a man to respect you.
Yep.
We are so confused. Society has gotten us so confused on what a lady is supposed to be, that we think it's all right to portray ourselves in that way. I don't get it. I don't get it. Is it me?
No, because I don't get it either. So please don't ask me to explain it.
Because you know why I say that? Because when I was in the military, I know I used to do it. So that's why I'm saying I didn't know then. And I was that type of, I think back then, I wanted to be loved, I wanted people to pay attention to me, and I wanted all that. But as you get older, you either mature, you go through some things in your life and you mature, or you find yourself in that same run. I can go and meet one of my friends from 20 years ago, and they're probably doing the same exact thing they did when we were in the military. You got to come to a point where you got to stop it. The club is not where it's at. Even when they're married, you know, they're in the club. Why? For what? If you're not in the club with your wife or your husband, what are you doing in the club?
Right.
You're looking. People, single people go to the club, not married people, unless they're going as a couple.
Right.
Single people go to the club, and that's how they, you know, interact with other people. But you shouldn't be in the club.
Right. Unless it's a couple date nights.
Yeah. Yes, unless it's a date night. And you don't even have to go to the club to do a date night. You can go to a dinner, movie, still a date night. But and I noticed that society has formed us in these sexual beings. And when you get upset when somebody offends you, but you're walking in here half naked.
Right.
Why are you offended? Why are we so confused with look but don't touch, but don't look and don't touch, and don't call me out of my name because of the way I'm dressed?
And the way I'm dancing, because some of the songs and some of the moves I'm doing, I think part of it is it's the whole groupthink mentality. If enough people do it, then it's okay. So, you know, maybe that's part of the justification behind it, you know. I really can't explain it. I've been fairly conservative, even when it comes to, and again, a part that goes back to me as a math person. I try to keep everything conservative when I buy clothes. I try not to buy trendy. I try to buy fashionable, but something that's going to have longevity beyond just season one.
I like unusual stuff. I mean, I wear the normal clothes, but I like the funky stuff. But it has to look right on me because I'm not a small woman, so I can't just put on. Why do we have this image that whatever the skinny girl's wearing, just because of naked and the
just because of this
style.
Right.
Why do we do that? My God. And then again, we think we look good. We don't care how. And it's like, and I want to say society, because we let in society influence how we have relationships, how we handle our children, how we handle ourselves. A lot of women, when you were saying earlier about women don't want to be alone, a lot of women don't know how to be alone. And I think if you have some alone time with yourself, you can have a better relationship with men. Because now you know what you want to expect from a man, and you already know, okay, how he needs to treat me. And I know what's not nice, and I know what's negative, and I know what's positive, and I can decipher from them. And I know if he says something negative to me, I want him to explain, why did you go that route with what we were talking about? Let him explain to him why you did it. Then you can say, you know what, is it just me? You know, how's everything going? Why am I allowing him to say these things to me? And is it me that I've done something wrong? Let me see if I can clear this up. I don't see why. I hear a lot of women say, oh, I got to have a man. I don't know about you. You got it. And there's times when I didn't even date anybody. Well, because I did all my dating.
Right.
You know, and I think some time for myself.
Well, I think we as women, too, what we do is we're so quick to invest in everyone else, and we don't invest in ourselves.
So
I will quickly, you know, jump on the bandwagon and help you with, like you said, we're quick to fix men. We're quick to help our girlfriends with their issues, you know, resolve whatever you need help, blah, 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 blah. But if it comes to me, you know, I should be the first person I invest in, and not on a selfish level. But when I say invest in myself, I'm saying know me. Like you said, know what I like and what I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Know what I love and what I don't love. Know what turns me on, what doesn't turn me on. What are the triggers that make me happy? What are the triggers that upset me? What things in my past, are there any issues in my past that I should deal with so that, that when I am in a relationship, you know, they don't come out later? Because there are little things that tend to come out in a relationship that can be detrimental to a relationship because they were unresolved from your childhood, from previous relationships. You know, what are my thoughts on money? What are my thoughts on children and child rearing? What are my plans and expectations for my future? You know, what are my goals and desires, my passions, my dreams? What are my aspirations? Those type of things, I should sit down as an individual and think about those things, dwell on those things, focus on those things, and focus on me so that I understand me. What do I like? What do I not like? You know, even the five love languages. What is my primary, secondary, tertiary love language? I need to know what turns me on, what ticks me off, so that when somebody comes at me, if they're coming at me and trying to win me over with words just because they know I'm a words of affirmation kind of girl, I'm not won over by that. You can't pull me in on that. You got to try. There's more to it. I'm deeper than that. But oftentimes we don't know who we are. We don't even love ourselves. I have to love myself more than anybody else who comes on the scene. Because then I'm easily swayed, I'm easily distracted, I'm easily tricked, I'm easily deceived, I'm manipulated, I'm taken advantage of, I'm hoodwinked, I'm bamboozled, and all that other stuff. But if I love myself as much as possible, you know, spiritually, emotionally, physically, financially, mentally, and all the other leads, then no joker or dog or whatever else we want to call them can come in and take advantage of me because I'm healed, I'm whole, and I'm healthy. But we go into these relationships broken and hurt and wounded. We're looking for somebody to make us feel better and make us happy. And no one can make you happy. Happiness is something that comes from within. That's my responsibility. And if I'm looking for him to make me happy, he's going to let me down because he can't do that.
That's right.
That's not his job.
You are so right. Oh my God, you are so right. You're thinking what I've been saying to women all the time. I want somebody to make me happy. Huh?
That's not his job.
You just come in a relationship happy already? You're not happy to be with him? That's the question I ask him. You're not happy to be with him? Yeah, what are you expecting him to do what for you? He's not supposed to do that for you. You're supposed to be already happy. In that case, you don't need to be in that relationship with that person if you're not happy to be with them. You know,
or happy to be with yourself.
Yourself, first and foremost. Some people are, like you said earlier, some people don't even like to look in the mirror at themselves. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
They might look, you know, when they're putting on their makeup, but to look, stand in the mirror in about 5 minutes and just look at yourself and see how, and I guarantee you can see who you truly are.
Mm-hmm.
You can see why you act the fool at times. You can see when you're happy. You can see when you're sad. You can see what makes you, you know, upset. But we don't do that. We're too busy hiding behind all these different masks. Then you expect the man to be able to accommodate you with all your different junk. You know, he doesn't. He don't pay attention to me. He don't do this. He don't do that. And yet and still, what have you done for yourself? Have you done it for yourself yet?
Right.
No. What are you talking about? Have you done all the things you say he doesn't do for you? Have you done it for yourself?
Right.
Well, I'm not supposed. Yes, you do.
You sure?
So how
I tell ladies all the time.
He can't read your mind.
Right. Tell them what you want, but first of all, you know, I tell women all the time, well, I'm waiting to get married to take my dream trip to such and such. Why? Because if you're 70 years old before you get married, or should you never get married, you're telling me you're never,
so
if you never get married, you're never going to go to Hawaii. That's right there is foolishness. I just don't understand that.
And just like another thing, too, since we're talking about this, I guess I'm a little different with the wedding thing. I don't see what the big thing about having a huge wedding. What is that about?
Right. Well, I think that's more of a, it depends on the person, but I think some of it it's really an outward show. It should be an outward show of the dynamics of the marriage. But I think what tends to happen is we put more emphasis on the wedding and not preparation for the marriage.
Exactly.
We spend hours and hours and thousands of dollars, tens of thousands, some hundreds of thousands of dollars for the marriage and the ceremony, and don't spend nearly as much time at the premarital counselor. So we don't know what to expect. But I sure had a whole bunch of bridesmaids, and the gowns were pretty, and you'll never see another gown like this one in all your life. It was custom-made just for me, and this ring right here, the one we about to pawn because we realize we can't afford it. So, you know, it's all that foolishness. It's foolishness. But, I mean, I understand for the first wedding or, your first hopefully only marriage that you do want to have a nice ceremony. But if couples really sat down and evaluated the cost of the marriage and the effect it'll have on you years from now. Of course, if the marriage is done how traditionally it's supposed to be done, where the bride's parents pay for everything, that's one thing. But even in that, you should be in moderation, because in this economy, whose family has $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $100,000 sitting around for a wedding? You know, I'm sure in most of our culture, the bride and groom are paying for the weddings themselves, and still expecting their wedding party to pay for their own gowns and tuxedos.
Exactly.
You know, we don't have too many marriages where we're paying for the wedding parties, right? You know, I'd have been a whole bunch of weddings, and every last one of them I was in, I paid for my stuff. So, and even with that, the weddings are still, and then in my wedding, everybody paid for their stuff, so let me not even act like I did the same thing. So, you know, and it's expensive.
Yeah, it's expensive. So what's the so is there a big difference in being married as a justice of the peace, or the big wedding? What's the difference?
Probably, I think the only difference is the cost, because at the end of the day, it's the marriage certificate is going to be the same whether you have 100 people, 1,000 people, or you just have 5 people in the room with you. The certificate in and of itself is the same. And whether you have a large ceremony or the justice of the peace, that is not going to be indicative of whether the relationship is going to last. The measure as to whether or not the relationship is going to last is the commitment that the two have made to one another, and their commitment to be willing to communicate, to be willing to change, to be forgiving, receptive, you know, to one another, with undeniable, relentless, unconditional love. At the end of the day, that's what's going to make the difference in the marriage, not whether I had a $50,000 wedding.
Okay. Now,
that has nothing to do with it.
But you have this big wedding, y'all, in debt. Your first debt is paying off your wedding, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying
mm-hmm.
to get a house, you know. So you think about that. I hear people say they're going to do the wedding and the house at the same time. I'm thinking to myself, you got some serious money.
And on the honeymoon.
Yeah, and the honeymoon on top of that, because nobody's going to give it to you as a gift anymore. So so you stuck with all this elaborate, these bills already off the bat. So your finances are already messed up from the get-go when you first meet the person. I mean, after the wedding, instead of waiting, you know, for all of that, they're doing everything because, you know, it's like you said, tradition. Tradition is going to kill a lot of people. Tradition is going to kill a lot of people. People traditionally get married. You marry the rich man, and he's an evil bastard, okay?
With girls on the side.
Yeah, with girls on the side, got baby, the baby mama drama. You're dealing with all of this on top of trying to make a relationship work, and we're not even thinking. Now, I am not going to say that I don't think a man should date a woman with children. I don't think a man should date a woman with children if he never had any children. Okay?
Well, I don't know if I agree with that.
Tell me why you disagree with that.
Well, only reason why I say I disagree with that is because my first book is on stepfamilies, and that one's won numerous awards. And I wrote that because I married my husband.
It's called stepfamilies?
No, it's called Blended Families and Anthology. It's been an Amazon.com number one bestseller in the stepfamily category, and it's been a top 100 bestseller several times. But
I didn't do my homework with you.
but now when I married my husband, we both had children, and I do know people who have married and one had children and one didn't, and it is a challenge, and it's not so much like my son, the young lady he married, she had a child and he didn't, but because he was brought up in a dynamic where he was raised by a stepmother, he had a special. Let's say some insider secrets on how to manage his son, whom he doesn't call a stepson, but his stepson. Having married her and not having children, he has been a great father to this. I mean, the little boy calls him dad. They've been married now for 7 years, but he calls him dad everything. You know, now they have a child together. And I know of other examples where it's worked. It is a lot of work. I'm not going to say it's not a lot of work, but step families in and of themselves are a lot of work. Matter of fact, it may be easier if you're dealing with one of the parents not having, one of the spouses not having children, and only one of them having children. And I say that because there were, let's see, if you've got a parent with two or three kids, and then you got the other parent with two or three kids, and God forbid you got multiple mamas and daddies on both sides, you got a few of people you're dealing with, as opposed to just maybe two or three kids on just, you know what I'm saying, on just one of the parent sides. It gets complicated. The more children, the more people you add in, the more complicated it becomes.
Exactly. And when you have a lot of fathers and a lot of mothers, it does. It makes it, what the hell? And then there you go with your baby mama drama. So let me ask you this. How do you deal with baby mama drama? I know you don't have it, but what do you
give
advice?
Yes, I did. What do you mean?
You did? Oh, okay. Yeah, you did. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I wrote a book about it.
Here you go again. Now you got me looking for all these books. You do have some books. I'm looking at it now. So I'm going to have to pull this one out. I'm definitely going to have to pull this one out. Now tell me how do you handle it? How did you handle it?
Well, now my husband has three children and two different mothers. One mother really wasn't much of a problem. She was in a different state and just kind of stayed to herself. Really the only problem that we had with her was the challenge was getting to see the child. That was probably the biggest challenge because we were so far apart. It was tough to get her to either fly him up or bring him up, or, you know, we would try to go down there when we could. The challenge was logistically getting him to us or us to him.
Okay.
And when we tried to coordinate to bring him up here, you know, she kind of challenged us on that a few times. That was probably the biggest challenge with her. But the mother who was a local, I would say the biggest challenge there was just that, most of the challenge might not have been so much with the mother as much as it was with the children, but the challenge that came in with the mother was the fact that she wasn't working. She was getting government assistance and filing taxes because I did all the taxes and everything for our family. So she wasn't working, and with their divorce, she was allowed to claim one child, and we were allowed to claim one. But because she wasn't working, she couldn't claim any child. There was nothing for her to claim. She wasn't working. So I went to her one day, and, you know, we had a decent conversation, not really a relationship. You know, we talked to one another, and I asked her, would it be okay if we claim both kids since you couldn't claim them anyway? You're not working. And she said, well, let me talk to my attorney or somebody. And came back and visited. She said no. So we ended up contacting an attorney and went around in circles and ended up having to get an attorney to get it taken care of. But anyway, we had an amendment written to the divorce decree that basically said that we can claim both children until she works at least 6 months out of the year. And then if she works 6 months out of the year, she claims the child, and then we claim the child. Well, she never worked out of the years when the children were minors. She never worked. So for the years that the kids were minors, we got to claim both of them. Yeah, you know, but we had to pay an attorney and go through all of that. Yeah. So, you know, that was probably like the only thing really when it came straight, you know, with her directly. There were a few times when we had some, you know, confrontations by phone, telephone. Because I had more challenge with my husband's daughter than I did actually with her mother. But whenever there was an issue with the daughter, she would go back and call tell the mother. The mother would call the house cussing and fussing at the husband or, you know, trying to check me. And then I would check her. You don't get to call my house and be disrespectful. So either figure out how to talk to me or we're going to end this conversation. So, you know, it was that kind of thing back and forth. But, you know, as the years progressed on, one day I called and we just kind of, you know, squashed the beef because at the end of the day, it's about the kids. And we have to kind of work through this thing so that the kids are, you know, the priority.
I haven't had that problem. I mean, I haven't had to have that kind of issue because my husband doesn't have any kids at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only one that had a son. My son was 18 when we got married because I was 38.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't have that problem at all, which is, for me, is good. I don't think I could deal with it the same way as others because I think with the ideal that you have someone else's kid and the woman, sometimes the woman is not mature enough to handle that he's moved on. Or the guy is not mature. When I say I'm saying mature in those areas. To understand she's moved on. And I think it has a lot to do with the ideal that the relationship they had wasn't good. So how dare her want to move on or he move on to a better relationship?
Right.
So then here comes the baby mama drama, and that's basically where it all, what's underlying is that she's miserable or he's miserable because they're not really happy with their situation. The idea that person's moved on, they're unhappy about it because he's happy now or she's happy now. So I'm going to make them miserable because he was not happy with me. We don't handle rejection. Women don't handle it well, and men sure in hell don't handle rejection very well.
I agree.
They can't handle, they cannot handle rejection at all, period. To certain things they can't. But when it comes to a woman telling them, you know, I decide I don't want to be with you, they can't handle that. It's hard for them, some of them. That's why you have them kill women or kill themselves because the rejection is too much, especially when you put so much in the relationship. I guess it's because of all the hard work. I mean, do you think it could be that?
Well, it could be that. It could just be an insecurity thing. It could be a trigger from something in childhood, you know, not just a relationship with this, but, you know, rejection from mom, rejection from dad, you know, just overall defeatist attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be just so many things, not just, you know what I mean? It could be something more deep-rooted or it could just be some real superficial type thing.
Yeah. And our atmosphere and everything that we deal with on a daily basis it affects us too. I keep thinking of the song "Bad Lady" from Erykah Badu. You care and all you're getting mad because the man rejecting you because you coming in here with all this junk in the relationship. And I don't want to deal with all your junk. Like you were saying earlier, how men say women are abrasive, mean, hateful sometimes, and we don't think about how we're being that way when we're doing it.
Right.
And we don't understand, like you said, we're carrying around all that other junk from other relationships, and you, why would you get with a man you don't trust?
Right.
Has he given you a reason not to trust him?
No,
sometimes,
but, you know, we tend to hold on to that, like you said, that stuff from way back when the other guy did it.
Instead of actually just saying, you know what, okay, I'm going to. And then if he gives you a reason to not trust him, that's when you sit down and talk, communicate.
Right. Right.
And say, you know what, I really believe that you did this, and I want you to explain to me. And if he lies, because, you know, me, you know, women always, we do our investigation. That's just something we do. If you find
right.
that he's lying to you, I think you can give him a chance. And if he lies to you again about the same situation, then that's when you need to, you know, make a choice. You know, you're either going to continue to lie to me or you're going to move on. Now, let me ask
right.
you this question. How do you feel about the woman having the cell phone and knowing everything he has in the cell phone? And what do you feel about that? Because I don't agree with that. I really, really,
what
really
do you mean,
true.
Like going through his cell phone and stuff like that?
Yes, yes.
No,
you,
I don't.
Do
I think that's a lack of trust. I don't feel with that. I don't go through my husband's phone and he doesn't go through mine. Mm-hmm. I don't
you
think that. I don't like that stuff. I think it's just it's an insecurity thing. And if he's done something where you feel that you have to do that, then, like you said, that goes back to the trust issue and if you're going to trust the person or you're not. But if you have to feel that you have to sneak behind them and, you know, he jumps in the shower, you're going through his clothes and you're rummaging through his phone and you're trying to hurt him, put it back so he can't tell you've been through it, what kind of life is that? That's foolishness. I can't do that. Mm-mm. If I feel like I got to rummage through his clothes and I'm looking for something, because if you look hard enough, you're going to find something.
Fine.
And the bad part about it is you might find something and it's not even what it appears to be, but because in your mind you think it is what it is, you know, we're going to look for trouble, we're going to find something, and it ain't even trouble. Then you're stirring up mess. That's the kind of drama that men don't like. You're stirring up stuff that ain't even there because you've got this perception, you perceive in your mind that he ain't up to no good. And sometimes they are, don't get me wrong, I'm not giving men a pass. But sometimes we create these things that aren't there, and then when we find something that could be totally innocent, but we blow it all out of proportion.
It's like we get paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
We're
very
paranoid,
much so.
And every guy we're with, we're doing the same thing over and mm-hmm. over again. We're acting, what you doing? How'd you do that? I seen you. I went to the store, and I saw you, and you were talking to that lady. You don't want him talking.
And put
talking.
Our girlfriends
you don't want
on him. Right. Then we got this grapevine thing going on for all our girlfriends. So it ain't me. My girlfriend's out looking for them. And now we got creative and we doing Facebook drive-bys and Twitter drive. That stuff is foolishness. I don't have time for that. If I'm not secure enough in my relationship, I don't need to be in that relationship.
Exactly.
That is not for
exactly.
me. I can't do it. Mm-mm. Holla, peace, those dados, whatever they want to say. Do you? I'm going to do me.
But then they wonder why they're not happy. You wonder why you never can find somebody. And we have to stop doing this, too. And we were talking about this earlier. We've got to stop opening our legs
mm-hmm.
to every Tom, Dick, and Harry.
When
I can confess, because like you said, you've been transparent. I was out there. When I was in the military,
mm-hmm.
I was out there. But it was something underlying why I was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never discussed it with anybody, but it was more going on with me while I was
mm-hmm.
in the military. And I was out there. But when it came to a point when I was tired of being out there, there was no need for me to stay out there. It was time for me
mm-hmm.
to pack my shit and get back
mm-hmm.
in, you know, okay,
mm-hmm.
time to go back in. And when you make that decision to go back in, there's no need to turn back around and go back out there.
Mm-hmm.
But we do. You know, if he ain't gonna do it, okay, I'll find somebody who will, huh? You know,
well, so you made a rational decision. You stepped out of emotion and you made a rational decision to say, this right here is not working, so I have to do something different, because you realize that the meaning of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And that's what those women are doing. What they're doing and not realizing it, they're claiming that all men are dogs, but what they're doing is attracting the same type of men. What I tell men and women all the time is you have to figure it out. What is it about me that keeps attracting this type of person? Because you're putting something out there into the atmosphere that says, I need dog. I need dog. Either you got on some dog meat, you got some bacon wrapped around your neck, you just had a whole bunch of dogs and cocked their legs up and peed on you. Something is kicking out some aroma that tells the dogs to come and devour me. So you
yes,
got to sit
exactly.
down and do a self-assessment and say there's something that I'm doing, I'm putting off, I'm saying, I'm emitting that is attracting this type of men. It's not that all men are dogs. We
nope.
just, some women just keep allowing ourselves to be chew toys. I'm letting him chew me up,
bury
me, put me in the ground, dig me back up when he wants some more, and toss me to the side when he's finished. That's my fault. I can't complain that I have fleas. I keep playing with infected dogs. That's my fault.
I love that analogy. That is an awful analogy. I love it. I don't even know what to say to that. Look, he hides it up under the bed when he wants to. Hide it, you know, like
mm-hmm.
dig it up, put it away, and then go
yep.
back, get it when
he's
ready to play with it again.
Go and get another. And, you know, most dogs got multiple chew toys. They got chew toys spread all over the place.
Exactly.
They pick and choose which
exactly.
ones they won't play with. And then they bury them in the ground and forget where they got them hidden. They're like, oh, I forgot I had that one over there. Let me, can I come? See? Yeah, you come on over there.
Look, she's steady fussing, but guess
mm-hmm.
what?
How come she you ain't called me in a long time? Steady getting ready. I'm so mad at you. I shouldn't let you come over, but you ain't doing me right. Okay, come on. What is that about?
Oh, boy.
It's the truth. Let me say, I can't find a man.
So, okay. Now, let's talk about the booty call.
Mm.
What is your comment on the booty call?
What you mean, what is my comment?
What do you think about women being booty called and even men being booty called? What do you think about that?
Well, I guess it depends on what you want. If you're not looking for a relationship, you just want somebody to blow your back out so you can finish your day up, then... Have at it. Now, of course, biblically, that's not the right thing to do. So I don't want nobody saying this Christian said go have sex. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying relationship-wise, you know, because you got some people just going to do it anyway. So if you're going to have sex anyway, don't look to have sex and expect to have a relationship out of it if all you're trying to do is have sex. Because he's not going to do that. He just want to blow your back out. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. And then he's going to go on his way. And you're going to be, after a while, even women, you know, even though our intent may be just to have sex, just to have this release as women, eventually, if you're the typical woman, eventually your heart's going to kick in. Even if your
exactly.
mindset is just to do this. We can
exactly.
try as we might, eventually your heart's going to kick in, and you're going to start having feelings for this man, and then you're going to be feeling all funny when he doesn't call or when you see him out with somebody else. You know, you're going to try to play cool like I'm okay with it, but now you're going to have something on the inside going to make you feel some kind of way.
So, saying that, don't be doing the booty call.
No, I don't do the booty call. Not if you're trying to get into a relationship. It's not going to happen. He's not, if you're just a booty call to him, he sees no value in you. He can get goodie box anywhere. Third
exactly.
main. He can get on the internet and request booty. He can order it online. He has his Angela. He probably got some friend down the road. We just talked about chew toys, old girlfriend. It's readily accessible. If he has any kind of swag
at
all.
Wait a minute. I'm going to have to interrupt you. What did you say? What, Angela?
Angela. He don't even need you, really. So, at the end of the day, if all you are is a piece of meat to him, he's going to treat you like that.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Yeah,
yes,
I did. It's all about the presentation. If you want to be treated like a queen, you have to do queen stuff.
Ah, I got to put this on. You said Angela all
mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. That is the very first time I've ever heard.
You never heard of Angela?
No.
So I mean, you have to. Those are things you have to take you consider. So if you set yourself up to be a booty call, that's all he's going to consider you. He's not going to take a booty call and introduce her to his mama.
Yeah.
You're not mama material. You're not wifey material, because a booty call will not be the mother of his children.
Mm-mm. But
he can't trust a booty call with his finances.
But you know what? When they get mad. They get mad because he doesn't choose them.
Well, yep, they sure do. I was just watching Snap yesterday, and there was a lady who was dating this guy. They were friends, but they were sexual friends with benefits for 2 years. And their agreement was they were just going to be friends with benefits. And, you know, they went out and stuff, but they were never boyfriend and girlfriend, just friends with benefits. Well, he goes out and meets this girl, falls in love with her first date, dumps his other chick, doesn't call it nothing. Because, you know, they were just friends with benefits. He ups and gets married. She finds out around the way that he's getting married, snaps, and kills the lady. Gets away with it for 23 years. Even though they were friends with benefits, and there was at no point where they ever considered boyfriend and girlfriend. In her mind, they were boyfriend and girlfriend. She lost it. And they found 23 years later, when DNA finally kicked in, they figured, and she was the LA police, did they figure out that she could kill that woman? Killed his bride. They had been married all of 3 months.
Man, because she didn't get it in her head that he didn't, she was just a booty call.
He didn't. And what made it so bad is when he called her, when she called him, he came over to try, because she was all upset and distraught. You know, she's his friend. He considered her a friend. See, men are able, another thing women don't understand about men is they're able to compartmentalize their emotion from sex. Women, we can't separate the two. We tend to put the two together. Sex and love go together for women. For men, they don't. That's why a man can be married, love his wife, devoted to her, have sex with somebody, and it not mean anything to him. It's a physical release for him. It's not emotional. For women, it's emotional. So he went over there to console his friend and ended up having sex with her, got up and went back to his fiance and still married her. I love my fiance. It was just sex with her, but I married my fiance. And that really messed the girl up. Now, Freddie messed up in her head. He made matters worse by sticking with her. So now she's thinking, oh, okay, I got him. No, you know.
No, because you ain't got him. You might think you do. But he didn't think that, because men, like you said. But, okay, now, could that be vice versa with men, too? Can men be the same way?
Yeah, but typically you don't see that as much in men. What tends to happen with men is men start out as, I think men and women, for the most part, all start out as companions. You know, we all want to be loved. We all want that special someone, for the most part. Now, you have people who have, you know, special childhood situations and circumstances, et cetera. But for the most part, you know, we want to be loved and cared for. What tends to happen is when a man is hurt by that very first woman he really falls in love with, men tend not to let themselves be vulnerable to that level again, and they put their guards up. So they change the game. Okay, I can't be this kind, loving guy anymore. I got to switch the game up. I got to be cocky. I got to be this, because I can't let another woman hurt me like this woman hurt me. So the men change the way they approach women, the way they act, their mannerisms, their gestures, you know, how they carry themselves in relationships. Whereas, and typically they say a man will fall in love, a man will love, or truly fall in love with a woman 1 to 3 times in a lifetime. Women 10 to 15 times in a lifetime really fall in love. So that shows you the difference, too, in the number of times and the emotional component for women versus men.
Okay, so why
Well, I think a large part of it is just the way the men are designed. God created men to be logical. God created men to be combative, not combative with women, but men are designed to go out, and they're warriors. They're designed to go out and fight, defend your country, defend your family, defend your home, fight for your woman, you know. So they have to be able to compartmentalize feeling, fear, emotion, love. I got to put that aside, and I have to go to war. I have to put that aside and step in front of this truck to save my wife. I have to, I may be afraid. I got to put that aside and do what I have to do to save, you know, to do what I have to do. Whereas women, emotion tends to kick in first. But that's how God designed us. That's why men work off of respect. Women work off of love. The primary for men is respect. You know, if you disrespect a man, he is as hurt or as upset as if you show a woman that you don't love her.
Exactly.
And
you're so right.
Mm-hmm. And then women, we are more emotional. That's how God designed us. He designed us to be loving, nurturing, kind, so that we can be the mothers that he designed us to be, you know, so that we can raise our children and be that helpmate to our husbands and be that loving, nurturing, encouraging, providing, supportive being that he designed us to be. That's how he made us. So, you know, and the two are to complement one another. So men are to be, you know, strong. That's why men are physically bigger in nature, because they, you know, for the most part, went to battle. Have to be able to do the more physical type thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so there's a physiological thing. There's a spiritual component behind it. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why, you know, the differences in men and women, and why and all those things affect even relationships.
Okay, now what
don't
do you
understand those? Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. So, what do you think about when you say relationships? You say about the physiology of the man, the difference. What do you say? You know what I'm about to ask you. What is your opinion on the same sex relationships?
Well, I say to each his own.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally, I love penis, so I'm not switching teams. You know, physically, God tells us to love everyone, but then, you know, there's also scripture that indicates, you know, if God wants us to procreate and replenish the earth, that requires a male and a female. So there's some, you know, controversy there on the biblical side, but, you know, I'm not to judge, because I got my own stank in my own closet, and I'm not going around doing sniff tests to see if your mess smells worse than mine.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the reason why I was asking, because we were talking about the dynamics of relationships with the male and female, so that's the reason why I asked that question. Would that be the same as with same sex when it comes to two men and when it comes to two women? Is the dynamics the same?
Mm-hmm. I can't answer that, but I would assume that if you have one playing the role of the male and one playing the role of the female, assuming that they have mastered the differences. When I say, you know, if you have, I guess, the female who is taking on the male tendencies, if she's truly
mm-hmm.
taking on the tendencies of a male, which I it's impossible to be able to truly take on the tendencies of the male. You can take on the persona, the swag, the look, the, even get the facial hair and all that other stuff. But to really take on the mind and the true characteristics of a male, I think you have to be a man. So I think there may be something that they can mimic, and maybe some things that they can, you know, imitate, but I don't know that they can truly take on everything. I'm sure that there may be some things that would still apply. I think at the end of the day, if you're still getting into a relationship, no matter who you're getting into a relationship with, if you're an easy win, nobody likes an easy win at the end of the day. It's too easy. It's, you know, whether it's male, 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 female, 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 it's just too, if you're an easy win, then anybody can get you, and I may assume that anybody's already had you.
Exactly. Because I was thinking when you were saying that, I was thinking the ideal of how the male who takes on the female role and how he over-exaggerates
mm-hmm.
how we are viewed. And it mind boggles me. Where did they come up with this perception that this is how we act? And a lot of times that's nowhere near the average black woman or woman, period,
mm-hmm.
acts in those ways that they take on. So I was just curious about why do they do that, and they could be more dramatic than the average woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I definitely don't know. I don't understand it. Again, I love penis.
Let me make that clear.
Let me make
I
that clear.
To anybody, I'm about the man. I ain't about nothing else. No,
mm-hmm.
that's the only reason why I ask that, because, you know, there's a big thing about gay rights and same-sex marriage and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing, that's the only reason why I ask you that, because it is still a relationship. Okay. Boy, you told me so much. Oh, my God, I'm just like, I feel so full because you just told me so much. And you can talk, young lady, okay?
Oh, yeah.
You can definitely talk, and you're talking deep. when it comes to relationships, man. And you know what? It has to take a lot of experience and going through to, to know and have the knowledge, because you sitting up there learning and reading it is not the same as actually you're experiencing these things.
That's right.
And you've got to be able to experience in order to tell your story.
That's right.
Man. Oh, man. Awesome. Your book is awesome. I'm going to go read Blended Families. And because you are something else, young lady.
Well, thank you.
So this is what I want you to do. I want you to tell everyone how they can get a hold of your books. If they wanted to get a hold to you, would there be a possibility that they can do that? Go ahead and give us that information for me, please.
Well, for the Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box, they can go to thegoodieboxbook.com, and that's thegoodieboxbook.com. And from there, there's information about the book, the audio book, Uterus Adventures, which is an excursion we're going to do, weekend excursion for women. There's a theme song of the audio book is out there, and a few other things we got going on for the Goodie Box book. For my other books, they can visit my other website, which is ValerieJLColeman.com. That's ValerieJLColeman, Coleman.com. And all my books are available at Amazon.com under my name, Valerie J. Lewis Coleman.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming, I mean, for coming on the show and explaining this, oh, my God, all the stuff that you explained, talking about your book, everything you're doing. Awesome, awesome, awesome. And I picked I think I picked the perfect time, right around Valentine's Day. You let us have it.
Yes, ma'am.
So, now, do you have any new stuff coming up? Do you have any new endeavors you're working on?
Well, the audiobook for the Goodie Box will be available probably sometime this spring. The first chapter is on the website, so they can hear the first chapter. Yeah, it's on the GoodieBoxBook.com site. So that'll be coming out. And then next year, the sequel to the Goodie Box will be coming out. And then maybe the following year, I'll work on the one for the young adults. I don't know. I got so much I'm trying to do. I'm supposed to be in Africa this year, and then a group in London wants me to come over and do a Goodie Box workshop, so we'll see. Isn't that exciting?
Oh, you're moving. Yes.
I'm trying. Woo-hoo.
I'm trying. Is this all you do? Are you just a writer?
No,
or do you...
I'm an adjunct instructor at three colleges. I teach math at three colleges.
Oh, Lord. I might need you. I'm keeping on because I might need you for my math. Well, I want to say thank you very much, Ms. Coleman. I had a great time. I want all my listeners enjoyed your conversation, enjoyed everything you said, because you are so to the truth about everything, man.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time.
Thank you again, and I want to say good night and happy Valentine's Day to you and your husband, okay?
Thank you. Same to you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You guys, we just had a great convo with Miss Coleman. I didn't realize, I didn't do all my homework, and I told her that, on everything that she's done. I am so, like, thrilled to talk to her. She's such an awesome person to talk to. I want to say thank you guys for listening in. I hope you went to her website to get you a free copy of the book. I want to say good night, and I shall see you guys tomorrow. This has been Through the Eyes of the Black Woman on the Say Your Peace Radio Network, and I want to say goodbye.